Good morning. Yes. Several people said that they had already heard enough to almost go home, and I felt the same way. It was certainly a blessing to be here, and Dale's message definitely lines up with a lot of what I have to speak here this morning, too. My series of messages is titled, A Call to Christian Relationships. And this morning's message is just that, a call. It's sort of an introduction, sort of a beginning. And the next message will be conversation in Christian relationships. And the next one will be close-up Christian relationships. And the last, conflict in Christian relationships. And I hope to cover those four. They won't be complete. But as I think about this subject, and I've thought about it for a while, quite a while, relationships are something we all deal with. We're all faced with it. It's something that hits us every time we go home, every time we walk into our meeting house doors, every time we go to a brother's meeting, when we interact with our employer or our employees, our wife, our children. Relationships end up mattering at almost every stage. You know, when, I think about Rehoboam, we heard about him today. And, you know, Rehoboam, it was an authority problem. It definitely was. But if you think about it, it was also a relationship problem. It was, you know, he broke relationship rule 101 there. He just simply messed up. And, you know, people can be good at relationships and not be Christians. That's true. You can have good relationships and not be a Christian. It is somewhat a method. There are certain rules to relationships. Now I hope by the time this series is over, you understand that this is not going to be about method. We'll talk about some methods. But it is primarily about the heart. There will be a chance to examine your own heart, our own hearts, concerning where we're at in a relationship first to God, our love for our neighbor, our wife, our brother, our what's actually inside. So this is not going to be entirely method, maybe not at all. But I would like us to understand that it does matter how we relate to one another. We may say, I have love for my wife, but she don't act like I love her. My son, I love my son, and he's rejecting me. We need to understand that sometimes what we think we are isn't always how we're coming across. And so relationships end up mattering at multiple levels. You think about, Joseph. Maybe start with Jacob. You know, Jacob messed up when he let his other sons realized that he had a favorite son. That created a problem. That should never have happened. That's a relationship problem. It's a sin and a relationship problem. But also, when Joseph didn't seem to get it when he told his brothers about how you're going to bow down in front of me. How would we accept that from our brother? You know, these are some basics. We won't all get thrown in prison. We won't all lose our kingdom. We won't all, get thrown in prison like Joseph did. But certainly we can learn something about Christian relationships. I would like to begin with some prayer. Lord, I ask, O God, that You would be with us, be with my voice today. You know that I have prayed many times to be given a voice. And I just pray that You would give these brothers a reward for coming here, Lord, that they would not be time wasted. Lord, that it would be a time they could be blessed and encouraged and challenged and would go home changed and transformed. There might be wives at home that are praying that their husband would come home a different man. Maybe sons and daughters praying the daddy would come home a different man. Or maybe some sons here, some parents are praying for. Maybe we've been praying ourselves, O God, that we would not go home the same as we came. I just pray, Lord, that You would just be here in our midst with the power of Your Holy Spirit. Pray in Jesus' precious name. Amen. I've been challenged here, you know, as Dale was here this morning and his white-haired wisdom. And I realize I'm pretty sure I'm the youngest speaker here at these meetings. And it challenges me a lot. And also, in many ways, the whole subject of relationships is something I probably am the least qualified in the room to do. And I don't say that to be humble. I would say that maybe the only qualification I have is that I learned it the hard way. If I have any good relationships in life, and I do, it's because I learned it the hard way. There's some of you that it came natural. You're charming, you have a nice smile, you have a way of carrying yourself, everybody likes you, you fit into crowds easily. That was not me. I did not fit in well. It was hard for me to fit in a crowd when I was young. And there was a lot of reasons why, and I could go into all that. But I certainly set out to learn how to have a relationship with people. I would want to say right at the very outset that a lot of it was, yes, learned. But a miracle took place in my life, and I learned from God. God placed love in my heart for my fellow humans. You know, we're to love our neighbor as ourselves. Think about that. Let alone our wife, our children, our brother and sister in the congregation that we are with, our customers, our employees, or even our neighbor. And to be given that love, if you have that love, if that's something you actually have in your heart, it probably was a miracle from God, or at least it was for me. So I would like you to start, and I should have had you open up to 1 Peter chapter 3. Just a beginning, opening thought here. In the beginning, there were good relationships. In the beginning, Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the day. And then came sin. We want to know why relationships are so hard, why there's so much fighting and warring and bickering and church splits and divorces. It's because of that. At the very root of it, it is sin. It is sin. God cares about a relationship. Chapter 3 of 1 Peter, if you've ever done any marriage counseling or have tried to find scriptures concerning your own marriage, this first part of 1 Peter is a good place to begin, just a foundation for marriages. But I would like you to see, starting at the 8th verse, he says this, is Peter. Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. You know, these are just basic truths here. Not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrarywise blessing, knowing that you are thereunto called, that you should inherit a blessing. For. I want you to notice this 10th verse. For he that will love life and see good days. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. So, Peter cares and cared about relationships. God cares about relationships. You know, God is, you know, sometimes we over-spiritualize the Gospels, I believe. We over-spiritualize the Gospel message. You know, when blind Bartimaeus, you know, cried out, Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me. He just kept crying out, and the crowd came to him and said, be quiet, shut up. And he just kept on crying out the more. So Jesus came to him and said, what do you want me to do? You know, blind Bartimaeus didn't say, oh Lord, I just want a closer relationship with you. I just want to be baptized in the Holy Spirit. I just want to have a deep calmness of heart. That's all he said. Lord, I just want to receive my sight. Something as simple as receiving sight. Jesus cares about these things. You know, a lot of life, you know, some people just hit the bumps in the road. You think, have you ever been around people that it seems like at every turn there's some relationship problem and they're just kind of constantly hitting a bump in the road? The messages I have today is largely, just simply, a message on avoiding the bumps in the road. In the beginning, there was good relationships, and then the fall. Years ago, I ran a store, and there was a ended up conversing with a lot of people. A lot of people would show up there, and I don't know if it was their plain dress or what it was, but people would show up, and they had a story to tell. They would want to communicate something in their life. One day, a man stopped in, and he just started telling how that he was a trucker, and he was on his way to Florida to meet his daughter that he had not seen in 13 years and a granddaughter he had never seen before. He said he was a trucker, and he loved the trucking lifestyle. He loved the sin that went with it, and he loved all the just being alone and being on the road. And his wife finally got sick of it, sick of his sin, and she divorced him. Turned his daughter against him, and he didn't care. He just kept right on trucking. He drove that truck for many years, and one day he said he was driving down the road, and he said he wasn't thinking about anything, but all of a sudden, he said it hit me. He said tears started running down my cheeks, and as he started telling me the story, tears started running down his cheeks. He said, I realized that I had nothing. I had a job, I had money, I had a lifestyle, but I had nothing because I didn't have any relationship. No one cares about me. I don't have anybody in my life. And so he was heading back to Florida to rebuild those relationships. I was reading about a diplomat in the diplomatic corps of the United States, spent her whole life going from place to place, building relationships with countries. And she was asked a simple question. You know, she was retiring. She was asked a question. Do you have any regrets in all your years as a diplomat? You know, she didn't talk about any of the mistakes she made as a diplomat. She went all the way back to her college years. She said, I left college. And my best friend in college called me a few days after we parted ways. She says, I've been diagnosed with cancer. Would you come and see me? And she said, no, I'm too busy. That friend called her three times. And each time she was too busy. She said, now I'm old and I'm retiring. And that's my biggest regret. I never went to see her before she died. I was talking to a man on the phone one day about a mutual acquaintance, and he was a man that we both knew quite well and had a long string of broken relationships in his life and business and otherwise. And he said to me over the phone, he said, Clint, that man has no friends left. He's burnt every bridge. You know, I know the man fairly well, had interactions with him, mostly unpleasant. And I realized in visiting with him, the man is unhappy. His life doesn't work. You know, he's made a lot of money, but he doesn't have any relationships that have lasted. You know, I talked to a man one time. He said, you know, I've left a trail of broken relationships behind me, one by one by one. My children have all left home now. I'm struggling with a relationship with my wife, and I see only one thing. When I look at all my relationships, all the churches that I've been in, there's only one common denominator, and it's me. It's me. So I would like to say that relationships is not about method. It is about the heart. And it's also about sin. It matters at the deepest core of our relationship to God. If you think about it, I think you'll agree that at the bottom of every sin is a broken relationship. And at the bottom of every broken relationship is a sin. You know, when I think about many times dealing with all of a sudden as a church elder, something will come in front of me. A sin. And I'm looking at it, and I'm, trying to figure out what's happened, trying to do what Dale talked about today. Just listen, try to understand. Many, many times, here's the sin. Here it is. And he's repented of, and he's turned from. But as I listen, over here is a relationship problem. And often, You can find that link between those two things. You know, this sin over here, often there's a broken relationship over here. You know, son acts this way because he's not getting along with dad and mom. You know, he maybe even use that as an excuse, and we can never use it as an excuse. You know, as a counselor, you know, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to deal with the relationship? Am I supposed to deal with the sin? And I've kind of come to the conclusion they have to be dealt with together. There's hardly any way to separate the two. We have to work with both. So sin leads to bad relationships. Bad relationships lead to sin. Happens all the time. You see it in, you know, one of the things that I noticed years ago, probably the first time I ever really noticed this concept. If you ever get around a girl who is flirting, just constantly after the boys. I have not seen a situation like that yet where there wasn't a relationship problem with dad. The young lady is not getting along well with dad, and she's looking for that. She's looking for that relationship somewhere else. You know, I've seen it in young men. Can't seem to leave the girls alone. The same thing. You know, dads, what do? You go to your son and or your daughter and, you know, lay down the law a little harder and be a little more firm and teach it a little more strongly. Or do you go and build those ties and those bonds between your son and your daughter? And most of the time, it's, you know, I'm speaking to men here, and I can speak to women too, but by and large, it's mostly a father problem in both of those cases. Yes, mom will have a factor in that too. Relationships will cause, a bad relationship will cause depression and anxiety. You know, there's a lot of people out there trying out medicines and all kinds of things. I've come to the conclusion that it is broken and damaged and fragmented and missing relationships that are at the back almost entirely. Not kind of, and of course, sin is tied in there. I just said sin and relationships go together. Most of the time, there is a bad relationship somewhere in there. It takes about, according to some studies, it takes about 6 hours of a day of good communication with people that we love to stave off depression and anxiety. Drug addictions, eating disorders, obsessive thrill seeking. You know, thrill seeking is something that's kind of new. That's obsessive sport or the high intensity, dangerous sports today that people are doing. A lot of that is climbing. More and more of that is happening as people's relationships are getting more and more fragmented. People are looking for something to fill that hole in their heart. Church trouble, marriage trouble, all those things come out because we do not get relationships. Health problems. There is a direct connection between our health and our relationships. Cortisol is a hormone found in people's bodies. It can be tested. You can find out how much cortisol someone has in their bodies. A man who is lonely, someone who is self-professed lonely, who struggles, you know, there's people who are alone, and there are people who are lonely. A person who is lonely is not always alone. You can be lonely in a crowd. You can be lonely married. But a lonely person has the same cortisol level in their bloodstream as someone who's just been punched in the face. That is the stress hormone. And that is what causes, cortisol is a precursor to heart attacks and high cholesterol and all kinds of problems. So getting our relationships right can enter right into the very core of our very health. Friendships. That's something that men struggle with, I believe. But friendships, you know, David and Jonathan had a friendship. Friendship, Bible says that he that has friends must show himself friendly. How many of you have been somewhere looking out over an overlook at the Grand Canyon or looking at a big mountain and you call your wife? You know, I do it all the time. Come, look at it with me. You know, it doubles joy to have a friend. It doubles joy to be with someone that you care about and share life with. Tech skills get the job done. You can be ever so smart. You can be ever so good at what you do. But it is your relationship skills that will get you a career. It will build those relationships where you will have a job for a long time. John D. Rockefeller said this back in the early 1900s. He said, "I will pay a man $20,000 a year who knows oil. And I will pay $100,000 a year to the man who knows relationships." And I'll say this, thinking about relationships, I have my own business. Many of you do too. That's kind of a characteristic of our way of life. I will say that as I have looked around and I have noticed men who have found a way to get along with their sons have a retirement plan built right in. It is a beautiful thing to watch a father just gradually, you know, get slower and slower and step farther and farther out of the business, and the sons step in. And you can see the opposite. You can see when fathers just can't seem to keep their sons around, and now the retirement plan is gone. So these things get very, very, very practical in our daily life. You know, this gets right into the core of our lifestyle as plain people right here. Missionary work. You know, in our congregation, we have a mission to Niger, And I noticed way back when Preston Oberholzer there, he was wanted to be a missionary. That was his calling. That's what he felt like he was called to do. And if you know Preston, you realize that's what he's called to do. Way back before he ever was sent, he started building relationships, started sidling up to people and talking with them, building trust, talking about things to build those confidences. You know, when it's finally time to make a decision, is the church going to send Preston to Africa? It was just pretty much unanimous. He had built those relationships, you know. And the other part of that is nowadays a lot of the mission work is done more as relationship or you know, conversation evangelism. You know, it's more about building friendship, they call it, friendship evangelism. You know, because you can't go to Niger, Africa, or Afghanistan and stand on the street corner and proclaim Christ. You'll soon end up in jail. But you can build friendships with people. And in those friendships, now you have a door open to begin to speak the gospel to them. And so relationships matter even at a mission level, especially in dangerous countries. So I'd like you to turn in your Bibles to Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3. I'm going to have to move along a little farther than Romans chapter 3 and the 13th verse. We would often go to this passage to, if we were doing street evangelism, we might go to this passage to say, "You're a sinner." And they might say, "Well, no, I'm not a sinner." Yes, you are, and so am I. We would go to this passage to build the foundation that we are all sinners before God. But I would like you to see particularly the 17th verse, but I'm going to start in the 13th. As it is written, Romans 3, 13. As it is written, "There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one." And what's the result of all that wrongness? What is the result? Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asp is under the lips. This is the result of fallenness. 14th verse. Whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace they have not known. The way of peace they have not known. Why? Because they do not know God. They do not know who He is. They do not have a relationship with God. Down in Kentucky and Tennessee, there's a belt down through there that is where a huge percentage of this opioid crisis, some of you probably heard about, all these people dying of overdoses and the opioid epidemics. Down there, they actually have towns there where they have actually set up coolers, semi-coolers there to put the dead bodies in. There's so many, they fill up the morgues. I was talking to a young man at a camp meeting and had actually spent some time down there passing out tracts in that area. And I got to visit with him, and I ended up reading a book about this region. And this region is clear full of people who do not know relationships. Okay, so they have a drug problem. That's what's on the news. But he pointed out in this book that there's hardly ever an argument that happens down there, a disagreement that doesn't end up with someone
not getting hurt. Somewhere, you know, there's blood on the floor. You know, this man left that area, ended up, because of several circumstances in his life, ended up in an area where it was different than that. And he was just amazed. He thought, well, somebody's going to get hurt. And then they didn't. So this opioid crisis came about not because there was more drugs there, but because people didn't know how to do relationships to start with. They ended up on drugs. Of course, they didn't know God. And the way of peace, they have not known. That's what stood out to me in this whole account of this region, is a lot of violence there. A lot of just, you know, every argument ends with somebody getting a knife out or a pot and pan and hitting somebody over the head. The way of peace they have not known. In James 4, you're very familiar with this. For whence comes wars and fightings among you? Where does it come from? Come they not hence even of your lust that were in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have, and ye cannot obtain. Ye fight and war. Did you ever notice that that verse is about where is your supply? Where is your supply? Is it from God? Or is it from your fellow men? Are we to go get it from someone else? Or are we, you know, later on he continues that by saying, talking about praying, asking God. Do we get it from God? Is our relationship with God is a direct relationship to our peace one with another. If we are deeply, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, but if we are in a deep relationship with God, at peace with Him, knowing where our supply is, knowing where our reputation comes from, knowing who holds our future, then all of a sudden we're less prickly, we're less prideful, we're less fighting for our rights from people, we're less strutting and posturing, because we're getting our supply from God. Knowing who we are before God matters. Years ago, I was challenged. I told you I had a struggle with relationships, and it was before God got a hold of me and done that miracle in my life. And a man was, and I feel like I was converted. I feel like I had some of you had that experience of kind of needing a deeper work in your life, and yet you do have a work in your life. I hope I'm not the only one. I sometimes jokingly tell my congregation that I had a second work of grace, or, you know, a second conversion, and that's theologically impossible. But anyway, there it is. And a man came to me one day and we were talking about these things. He said, Clint, I want you to ask yourself a question. Are you sure you're born again? You know, that hurt me at that time. That was a painful question, you know, for him to ask that, because I felt like I did. Yes, I had relationship problems, but I have a relationship with God. But you know what? Looking back on that, that was a good question for him to ask. It was a good question. And I would think it's a good question for us. If we're like that man who looks at, we look back at our life, and we look at the panorama, the vision of what we have went through, all the brokenness in our lives. We look back on that and we realize that there's one common denominator, and it's me. We maybe need to ask, do I have that relationship with God? That's a question we need to ask. Some of you maybe think it's a little bit of a wimpy subject. I remember back, we had some church trouble back, I don't know, it's been now close to 10 years ago, and I remember the subject of relationships came up a lot and a lot and a lot. And I know some of us got sick of the subject. You know, it's like, you know, we're going to solve all these deep problems in our church by fixing the relationships. There was a truth in that, but we needed to fix the problems in the church too. Anyway, I would just like us to understand that it is a big part of the Bible. I came with about 5 printed out pages that I found just on relationships. And as I was going through it again last night, I found more scriptures that I could add. The Bible is full of the subject of relationship. The entire Sermon on the Mount, a good chunk of it, is about relationship. You think about it, divorce and remarriage, going the second mile, forgiveness, leaving your gift at the altar, and making peace with your brother. There's lots of them. Matthew 18 is full of relationship. The last half of Ephesians 4 and 5 is about relationship. A good chunk of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. The summary of the law. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, you can take this Bible now and just put the whole Bible under that category. Loving your neighbor as yourself. These messages, a lot will be about how do I love my neighbor. These things end up matter. You know, the book of Philemon You ever think about, you know, this runaway slave? You ever read that book? Just a letter is all it is. Just from how diplomatic Paul was. He was an extreme diplomat to be able to write that letter and get by with it. You know, the greetings. Paul is the whole last chapter of Romans. Romans 16 is all greetings of people. There's no doctrine in there. Paul was a relationship builder. You know, we think, well, maybe Paul was some great preacher. He might have been. I don't know. He said he wasn't. I kind of doubt what he said. I imagine he was a great preacher. But he definitely was a relationship builder. These Gospel, Titus 3. Titus 3. I'm going to have to move pretty quickly here. Titus chapter 3. I would like you to notice in this passage, if you look at the second chapter, 11th verse, you're going to see the concept of grace there, the grace of God. If you go a little past where I'm going to go, you're going to find in the third chapter, the 7th verse, you'll find more about grace. And the passage that I'm going to read to you, I believe, is one of the definitions of grace. It's not, the word grace isn't in this passage I'll be reading. It's in the 1 through 4. But it has this other concept, the kindness and love of God. The kindness and love of God. And I'm just going to, before I read it, I'm just going to tell you, that kindness and love is not agape love, but it is friendly love. It is when the kindness and love of God appeared. Now we'll read it. I want you to see that before I read it. Grace and the kindness and love of God. Put them in mind there. Paul's telling Titus what to teach. Start the second verse. To speak evil of no man. To be no brawler. But gentle. You know, no brawler. That's not to be a fighting person. Not someone who's always arguing. Gentle. Let your moderation be known to all men. Let it be a characteristic of your life. Showing all meekness unto all men. All these, anyway, we talk about rioters and protesters anyway. For we ourselves also were, and I want you to notice that word, we also were, remember this concept of grace, were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving divers lusts and pleasures, living. What was the result of this were, when we were foolish, when we were disobedient? What did it look like? We were living in malice and envy, hateful, and hating one another. But after, the kindness and love of God our Savior towards man appeared. And then he goes on, he talks about how he saved us. He saved us from this former way of life, which is a hateful life, a life in which we're against each other, fighting each other. And so the very nature of Christianity, the very nature of being a born again, changed, transformed child of God, is to no longer be fighting one another all the time. Constant relational challenges and problems constantly coming up. But it comes from when it appears. You know, what does that mean? We have to see it. You know, the grace of God is something that if we have not yet experienced, we find it very hard to give. If we have not experienced forgiveness, it is hard to forgive someone. If we have not experienced grace from God, we don't know, it hasn't appeared to us. If we have not had a transforming experience in our own life, I know that I was healed in my relationship to my dad. Just simply, very simply, when I didn't have to have a big conversation, didn't have to beat things out, didn't have to have a big reconciliation process. When I saw myself as a desperate, ugly, dirty sinner, only one hope, and that's Jesus Christ. When I saw myself there and fell on that rock and was broken, my dad looked a whole lot different than he did before. All of a sudden, I found him to be in the same place as myself, a fellow human, a fellow struggler, a fellow traveler. So we need to find ourselves in that quiet rest, that quiet Gelassenheit with God. John, in John chapter
13, it says, a new commandment I give unto you. You knew I was going to go here. You know, we hear this passage all the time, don't we? You know, it says that by this all men know that you're my disciples. You have love one to another. We quote that. We say it. And we continue to have church splits. We continue to fight. The reason why it's a command is because it doesn't come natural. If it came natural, we would do it automatically. But it is a command because it doesn't come natural. Most of you probably have at least heard of Gladys Aylward, the little Chinese woman that went to China. Beautiful story. You ought to read it if you haven't. She was a woman that had a tremendous impact there. She ended up rescuing 100 children from the Japanese army that was coming. They were killing off a lot of the Chinese, and she was instrumental in stopping a prison rebellion, and a lot of people were being killed. She was instrumental she would intervene. There was a certain provincial governor that she would often go to. You know, she would be called, and somebody was going to be executed for some minor crime, maybe stealing $5 or something, and have his head chopped off, you know. And she would intervene with this provincial governor, and she was with him quite a lot. I don't know what to call it in China, but I'll call it provincial governor. He was kind of the head guy over a pretty large region. And the Japanese were coming. And she'd had this interaction with him a lot. He ended up spending more and more time with him. He's an old man. And the Japanese were coming, and he called a meeting of all the upper officials in this part of China. And he set Gladys beside him. And after the meal, he stood up and he started talking about Gladys. He said, when Gladys came, she didn't know the language. Now she speaks like a native. When she came, her ways were strange. We didn't understand her. But we eventually found out that she's here because she loves the Chinese people. In fact, he went on to say, she loves the Chinese more than the Chinese love the Chinese. And that was true. You know, they would abandon their babies. You know, they would abandon their old people. They would treat each other horribly. And she would often, you know, would find these abandoned people and help them. He said, she loves the Chinese more than the Chinese love the Chinese. And he said, I kept listening, trying to find out, trying to understand her. And she kept talking about this Jesus man. He said, finally I realized that it wasn't Gladys that was loving us, but it was this Jesus man loving us through Gladys. Now that's a challenge for us. You know, what is the Christian superpower? It's the one thing that we have. It's the one thing that sets the Christian church apart. A neighborhood should know, not by the fact that a whole bunch of people drive around in black cars and whatever our markings are, but there should be known there's a people over there that love. You know, they love their neighbor. They love one another. And how did Gladys show it? She didn't just have this warm feeling in her heart. She was constantly showing her love to the neighbors. And so it went on. He went on to say, he said, I don't know this Jesus man, but I have decided to follow this Jesus man, and I will learn from Gladys who this Jesus man is. You know, it gets into the very core. How we love our neighbor, how we love one another, gets into the very core of whether we have a relatable Christianity. Whether we have a Christianity that anybody is going to want any part of. Let's learn what Jesus actually said. By this shall all men know, you're my disciples, if you have love one to another. Our influence comes more by how we have interacted with someone than it does by our doctrines. You know, we would love it. A lot of us intellectual types, we would love it if we could sit down with someone and just hammer away, this is the doctrine, this is the doctrine, you know, the divorce, remarriage, and this is non-resistance. And we would just lay out all the facts, and we would get logic just completely airtight, and we would get somebody completely convinced. But I can tell you that relationships end up mattering more than your doctrines and your logic. We see it over and over again. I think I can prove it to you. Some of you in this room can say there's someone in your life. You can just sit here and think about it. There's someone in your life that gave you grace when you didn't deserve it. Forgave you when you didn't deserve it. Believed in you
who came up alongside of you, came under you when you desperately needed help. They received you as you are. They gave you unconditional love. There's a person in your life. I hope there's a person. If nothing else, just your mother. I hope someone in your life has been that for you. That person has a tremendous impact in your life. A tremendous impact. But I will say something else. There's probably people in this room who has been hurt very, very badly by someone. In fact, there's probably people in this room that have been hurt in ways you don't even want to talk about. I preached this message in North Carolina Bible School, and I found out soon after, just saying just what I said right now, brought some things out of the woodwork. There's people that have abused one another, treated one another badly. And I can tell you, I don't care who that person is that treated you badly. He might have every doctrine in a row. He might go to the right church, dressed in the right way. He might be able to explain the Bible better than anyone you know. And he might be as logical as you can possibly imagine. But you're not going to listen because he hurts you badly. So relationships end up mattering at a deep level. And this matters, fathers. Fathers to your children. You think you're going to convince your children by being absolutely right on every single subject? Or what? Why don't we just try loving our children? And then all of a sudden, we've earned the right to speak into their life. And they'll ask us. Yet show I you a more excellent way. I think about how the last chapter, 1 Corinthians 12, that last verse, how it ends. I'll show you a better way. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels. Good relationships are not in the knowing and not in the doing. So often we try. If I could just convince them how smart I am, or if I could give them a hug or give them a flower or do something to convince someone of love, then I would win. We think about that with wives so often. But I can tell you that it is in the being. It is in the being. You know, I was talking to a brother one day, and he said, you know, he'd had an anger problem, and God had got a hold of him in a lot of ways. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, I'm not like I was, but my children are still scared of me. I'm not like I was, but my wife is still afraid of me. He said, it made me angry again. He said, then I realized that they see something that I don't. They see that down in the basement is the tiger. And the tiger is still growling down there. I've got the door shut. And it's not open right now, but they know the tiger is still there. You know, that tiger showed on his face. It showed on his countenance. It showed in the tone of his voice. It's there. We see it. We know it. It was kind of a darkness that shows. You know, it is in the being. You know, if the tiger is still in the basement, and we wonder why people are still scared of, why they still won't talk to us, why our children still they won't open up to us. I don't know what the tiger is in your life, but the tiger is that deeper, that more spiritual, that deeper cleansing that needs to happen so that our relationships can come free. Back in 1936, there was a book that hit the shelves. At this time, as we speak today, it is the 11th bestseller in the United States and has been for a very long time, since 1936. At this point in time, it has sold 15 million copies. That's a lot of books. And that book's title is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Now, I can tell you, full disclosure, I can actually say I recommend that book. But I can tell you it has got two problems. Number one, it deals only with method. And number two,
Dale Carnegie was divorced. We need to put that into perspective. So these messages, when I talk about that tiger in the basement, we're getting right to the very core of what it means to be born again. What it means for to have a life that is transformed from the inside out. You know, you've been around people who have been transformed by God, and there is a glow that comes forth from them. And you've been around other people, you don't know. You can't figure it out. You don't know what's there, but there's a darkness there. There's a wall there. There's a prickliness there. You know, as I use the word prickly, I don't know if I've been around porcupines or not. But, you know, a porcupine isn't something you want to get close to. There's people out there that are porcupines. And there is, when God's Spirit moves in us, we stop being polite and we start loving and it starts showing. You know, those people will say, you know, it comes across harsh. You know, maybe at a brother's meeting, boy, that was ouchy, that hurt, you know. And I didn't say, what do you mean? You know, I didn't mean nothing by that. You know, that brother over there said about the same thing. You didn't get upset with him. You know, but there's a spirit that came across in the words. You know, Nabal there almost, he did, actually God eventually killed him there. But you know, he was, David wanted to, of course, be paid for all of his protection of Nabal, you know, and the servant said that he's such a scoundrel. He's such a scoundrel, no one can talk to him. You know, I don't know what Nabal thought he was. Did Nabal think he was approachable? I don't know. But there was something in Nabal that prevented people from coming and saying, you know what? This is getting dangerous. It matters. Hindrances to relationships. I'll go through quickly here some hindrances to relationships. I was told since I started a little late, I might have to end just a little late. I don't want to end very late. I think of these as barnacles on a ship. You know, a ship's going through the water and we're getting along. You know, we're not sinking, but we're kind of struggling along, but there's these barnacles on the side of the ship that need taken off so that we can actually slice through the water and make it through our lives. The first one I would like to speak about is a defiled conscience. A defiled conscience. Romans 1:28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. And if you read that, that's in Romans 1, you can look at it. They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. And what follows from that? A long list of sins, and most of them are relational sins. There's malice and hateful and envying and killing and murder and all kinds of terrible things happen. Why? Because they did not like to retain God in the knowledge. In 1 John it says this, but if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. If we walk in the light as He is in the light, what comes from that? We have fellowship one with another. Have you been around someone? You know, you've seen in children. You know, they've done something naughty. And all of a sudden they start acting out. They start avoiding. They start doing strange things. And a wise parent will start, all of a sudden something's happened. They realize it. It's time to start asking some good questions. And every once in a while you find the same thing. You find it even with older people. All of a sudden they start ducking and dodging and avoiding. You know, I was, years ago, there was a man that we all knew, and you know, he was a deacon in the church and had a big business, but his business started crumbling. His employees started leaving. And he couldn't quite get our fingers on what are we seeing? I don't know. And then it came out. Some gross and horrible sins that he had been harboring in his life finally came out. And that crumbling of his life happened at that time. You know, some people, you know, they all of a sudden they start pulling away from church. You know, there's too many rules, and you know, I don't like to go to brothers' meetings anymore. You know, it's time for pastors, and those times those things happen. Start asking some hard questions. What's going on in your life, brother? Why are you pulling away? Why are you avoiding? Why do you have a wall between you and your brothers? A defiled conscience. Secret sin separates. You're going to want to write something down. That is an important point. Avoiding people to avoid discovery. Unfulfilled expectations. That's a big one. You know, we see that a lot in marriage. We expect from our wife what only God can supply.
we also cannot expect from any one person what God has supplied His body for. And we cannot expect from people at all what God is giving to us from Himself. You know, lust, one of the things, you know, that lusting. Lust is, one of the simple definitions of lust is to want something that God has not given. And that unfulfilled expectations cause a lot of grief. We see it with sons, with fathers. Sons expect father to be perfect, like God. Of course, it doesn't happen. And then there's a breakdown in relationship. Our wife doesn't do what we expect. She isn't what we expect, what we want. And the relationship crumbles. This starts with knowing who God is. Eyes full of adultery. Eyes full of adultery. That's a 2 Peter 2:14. If we have eyes full of adultery, and ask your wife if you haven't yet, there's men out there your wife is uncomfortable with. And she'll tell you so if you have a relationship with her. She'll say, I don't know about that guy. There's something about the way he looks at me. You know, if you have eyes full of adultery, you're alienating half of the human race, especially the good half, the part that wants to be treated with respect, the part that has some reserve. You know, maybe those eyes full of adultery will attract the wrong kind of person. But if you want to separate yourself from about half of the human race, have eyes full of adultery, looking through and not at. Greed and self-centeredness, narcissism and individualism. You know, there are people out there who they do not get their sustenance from God. They're that person who has that lust that James speaks about, and they are using people. They are climbing the ladder on people. They're not building friendships. They're recruiting enablers. The Bible says in Colossians 2:10, you are complete in Him. We don't need other people to complete us. We don't use other people. I will be talking about lies and anger and unforgiveness in a different context. I would like to speak a little bit about whining, complaining, pessimists, critical, gossips. People are always explaining themselves and defending themselves and bragging. I put that all in one big category. People are unpleasant to be with because of the way they communicate. They're always defending. They're always explaining. They're always bragging. They're always pessimistic. They're always speaking down. You know, we love the gossip, but we don't like to listen to gossip, do we? That's us. You know, there's the loser limp. You know, the reason why this didn't happen for me is because of, and we have our explanations. And we see through it in other people. Do we see it in ourselves? Jealousy. Jealousy breaks down relationships too. It's a scourge and the destroyer. You know, you think about, you know, Absalom was jealous. You know, jealousy has destroyed churches. Lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Beware, Absalom. Social media is destroying, and I don't have to be a conservative elder to say that. Do a little research online someday. Technology. Pride. Pride destroys relationships. God resists the proud, and so do we. You know, pride is something that is the opposite of humility. And I would say this in humility. I can find it here. Proverbs 22:4. By humility are riches, honors, and life. Proverbs 22:4. By humility. Ben Franklin, one of the most famous people of his day, still fairly famous. For a long time, he was the only one on our coinage that wasn't a president. He was on a self-improvement program. You can find it in his autobiography of Ben Franklin, kind of interesting story of his own life and how he was trying to become a better person. And at one point he decided he wanted to be more humble. He realized something about humility. He realized that humble people are drawn to humble people. People have friends. It's easier to have friends if you're humble. So he wanted friends. He wanted influence. And so humility, that's something I want. So he wrote down that his list of goals was more humility. Later on, he wrote in his diary this. Have not, in the area of humility, have not gone very far except in the appearance thereof. Now, even the appearance thereof gained him a lot of friends. But the point is that God wants us to truly be humble because we know who God is. You know, if we don't know who God is, and we don't know who we are before God, we will be proud. Yes, and I have run out of time somewhere along the way. I would like to speak about the countenance, a little bit about countenance. You know, a smile helps. I read of a true story of a man who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. Of course, they fished his body out of the water, and they went to find out where he lived, found his apartment. And on his desk in his apartment was a note. "We'll walk to the bridge." This is what he wrote on his note. "I will walk to the bridge. If someone smiles at me, I will not jump." Can we be smilers? Can we show some approval one to another? I would like to end. There are several things that I'm skipping over here, but I would like to just point out that we need to be learners. Years ago, I was around a whole group of church people, a bunch of men actually, that had been a part of a church group where the Spirit of God had moved. I heard their stories and their testimonies. God had came down and moved in that congregation. And here they were, they had these glowing testimonies of what God had done and was doing. But the reason why I was in a relating with them at that time was they couldn't get along with each other. And I would just like to say that there is a need to learn about relationships. So God can work in our life. Powerful stories. I believe those stories of what God had done. Most of those men that I know are still walking with the Lord. But they did not know how to get along. You know, Brother Andrew, beautiful story of how he drove. What country he drove to? But he drove for like 300 miles on an empty tank. I don't know if you've read that story or not, you know. And he just prayed and God kept that vehicle going. You know, it's possible that we can actually have a miracle take place. But you know, that's not the normal means for keeping a vehicle going. It takes gas, normally. And so, the normal means of relationship is to do them right. God can reach down, He can pour grace into our clumsy endeavors. But there is some rules to life. There's rules in our gas tank of life. You know, the Bible says, tells husbands to dwell with them according to knowledge. We need to dwell with our wife according to knowledge. We need to know our wife, understand our wife, understand why we're different. We can learn. You know, I think it's okay to recommend such books over this pulpit, but you know, I recommend, I don't want every aspect of the book, but you know, the 5 love languages or love and respect. These are ways that you can go and find out how to love your wife. These things end up mattering in our life. Have empathy one for another. I will be speaking, I think it's tomorrow, out of 1 Peter. I'm going to speak about that. Be pitiful, tender-hearted. That just means to be empathetic, to feel and to know, to understand, a heart sensitive to the needs and feelings of others. To experience life somewhat through other people's feelings. It's a deep and important truth. You know, I read about a man, true story again, of a man who was... He had diagnosed with throat cancer, and it looked like he was going to die. He was certainly going to lose his job. He was in a pretty bad way, and he really desperately was scared, and he needed people around him. So he called his wife and his daughter into the room and told him what the doctor had told him. And, you know, he was crying, and he was scared, and his wife was sympathizing with him, but his daughter sat there cold. And finally, you know, he kind of got done. He looked at his daughter, you know, looking for reaching out. And his daughter said, "I don't care whether you live or whether you die." And she walked out the room. Now, that's a hard story. And we want to blame the daughter. But he realizes he was going through his treatments. He started asking himself, how had he been treating his daughter? You know, he'd given her everything he thought she needed. He'd given her education, gave her food, gave her, clothing. He had supplied for everything. But as he realized, he had lived a very busy life. And he was not a part of her life at all. And she was hurt by that. Yes, it was wrong for her to say that to her dad in that hour of extremity, but it was a wake-up call for dad as he realized that he had not reached out and given to his daughter. You know, we bring our gift to the altar and there remember that our brother has ought against you. What gift are we bringing to the altar of our relationships? We bring what we want to give. And for us fathers, a lot of times it's just money and you know, the things of life. We provide for our families. But are we providing for our families what they need? And one last thing. If you don't know that you need to learn, look around. You know, there's probably someone in your life, first of all, who you have a lot of respect for, and yet he has some big gaping holes in his relationship abilities. You know, maybe some of the best men in your life. You know what? You might be one of those, too. Might be someone who thinks you have it put together. You know, I was talking to some girls about this one time in a group discussion. And I asked them, I said, do you know of anyone in your life who thinks they've got relationships figured out and yet everybody knows they don't? And everybody raised their hand. Everybody knew someone like that. You know, let's don't be that person. Let's go to God and ask Him, Lord, what is the holes in my life that is hindering? You know, the worst of it is that those of us, especially those visible Christians, we're kind of the visible Christians, aren't we? People are looking to us for some indication of the character of Christ, some indication of who He is. And there might be some deep hole in our personality, our way of carrying ourselves, the way we maybe a deep hole in our character. It might be something wrong. It might be a tiger in the basement. But one way or the other, people are looking to us for some example, some indication of who Jesus is and how He would respond in a relationship.